Welcome to this fourth podcast on internal communication practice governance. Last time we looked at why line managers don't need to feel defensive about receiving extra support with their IC activities, but it would be quite understandable if they were still wary about accepting help for two perfectly valid reasons. Firstly, if they don't need support, how can they be confident the IC team isn't going to come meddling in their communications? Or, if they could use some help, how can they be confident they'll really be getting what they actually need? These are crucial questions we need to answer, and surprising though it may seem, the answer to both is actually the same. And for some folk, it may seem kind of counterintuitive, or even a little bit nuts at first. Because what we need to do is ditch another part of our cultural inheritance. To give line managers the confidence they need in IC practice governance, whether they need help or they don't, we have to bin the very concept of best practice for good. Now, that may sound like a lunatic idea at first, but if we pause for a few moments and give ourselves a chance to think it through, it should become clear that this is, in fact, the way to go. You see, the very concept of best practice has been around for yonks. It's the go-to phrase used by HR folk and business managers when deciding how to improve their policies and procedures. But it's always raised nagging doubts in plenty of people's minds. You know, best in whose eyes? Who says so and why? What's the justification? Now, interestingly, if you look it up online, you can find many thoughtful articles eviscerating the very notion of best practice. But no one, it seems, has ever come up with a satisfactory alternative. Until now. Because no doubt you're familiar with the expression fit for purpose. And maybe it's closer to what we really need, but even that expression has challenges. However, what if we were to refine it a little and start thinking in terms of practice which is demonstrably fit for valid purposes? DFVP. Of course, it's way more of a mouthful, but if you give yourself an opportunity to compare this phrase to that of best practice, maybe you'll see it's worth the extra eight syllables for five reasons. The first reason it's better is clarity. Now, almost any business activity will likely have at least two purposes. Certainly, IC activities do. Firstly, there's the purpose of internal communication itself. And then there's the purpose of the business activity being communicated about. And unlike best practice, the DFVP phrase explicitly requires us to state what those purposes are up front. Now, that's not to say purposes are never articulated when folk talk of best practice, but they are not explicitly required, so they may often be overlooked. And even if the purposes were expressed when the best practice was being defined, they can easily get left out when that practice is communicated to others. So over time, many people may end up blindly going along with whatever they're told is best practice. And that means they're probably less able to tell whether what's being asked of them is as good as it could be for the specific circumstances they face. And can you see how even the suggestion of expecting people to blindly fall into line might give some managers reasons to resist any new guidance they might be given on internal communication? More insidiously, perhaps, if the purpose isn't being communicated, those managers wouldn't be in a position to tell whether that purpose itself is appropriate. And this leads us to the second reason to pursue the idea of DFVP, the second benefit: validity of purpose. Establishing the purpose of any activity, particularly a long-term one, is rather like setting the compass bearings on a ship about to sail across the ocean. Get it just a tiny bit out at the beginning, and the cumulative effect will get bigger and bigger as we go along. And what could happen if managers were being asked to follow best practice to fulfill an invalid purpose? That would mean your managers would be in the rather perverse situation of following the best way of getting the wrong results. And if that were the case, could we really blame any managers for being wary? Probably not. So when it comes to IC practice governance, they need to be able not only to see the purpose, but to know that it's valid. And there's another reason why best practice simply isn't good enough here. If people haven't articulated a clear purpose when developing best practice, it's almost inevitable that they'll have to use subjective opinion to define what's best. But if everyone were to be talking in terms of practice which is demonstrably fit for valid purposes, it forces the purposes to be articulated and validated up front. So it reduces the risk of infighting, whether outside or inside your organization. DFVP makes consensus so much easier. But even that can't do the whole job on its own. So we need to go still further, which is why DFVP has that all-important third benefit provided by the D at the beginning, demonstrably. Including the word demonstrably in our criteria means we have to show our workings out in two key ways. First of all, what specifically makes that purpose valid? Don't just take someone's word for it. Show us your workings out. And secondly, what makes this way of doing internal communication fit for that demonstrably valid purpose? Have we done our due diligence? Can everybody see that due diligence? If they're wary, if they're skeptical, are they able to pick through our reasoning if they want to and challenge it if they don't agree? If we want people to have justifiable confidence in IC practice governance, we need to step up and give them those justifications. Justifications they can challenge. Because we all have blind spots. And just as we may know things they don't when it comes to internal communication, they surely know things we don't when it comes to their needs. That's why every bit of DFVP is so important. Because if people can't see the purpose, nor what makes it valid, or the practices fit for that purpose, they're having to take everything on faith. Is it any wonder that best practice in all manner of business activities is so unstable that you can often end up with a latest flavor of the month, even though the purpose of the activity clearly hasn't changed? And if that's been people's experience for years, should anyone be surprised if at least some line managers might resist IC practice governance if it isn't demonstrably fit for valid purposes? That's why DFVP is absolutely the way we need to go. And if we do go down that route, the benefits can be extraordinary, because it's with the fourth benefit that things start to get really rather sexy. Because by talking in terms of practices which are demonstrably fit for valid purposes, we're kind of backing everybody into an empowering corner, because it creates a new paradigm in which only four possibilities exist. DFVP is obviously the possibility we are advocating, because if the practices aren't demonstrably fit for valid purposes, then by default, they must be either demonstrably unfit for valid purposes, demonstrably fit only for invalid purposes, or demonstrably unfit for invalid purposes. Now, what kind of leadership team is going to advocate any of those other three options? And how is a line manager going to have a leg to stand on if you are able to demonstrate the way they are communicating is unfit for valid purposes? Not because you say so, but because they can see your workings out. So because DFVP removes subjectivity from the debate, it becomes so much easier to win people round. So working with IC practices which are demonstrably fit for valid purposes effectively gives you an unshakable technical mandate to lay down the law, in a respectful and compassionate way, of course, about how IC has to be conducted in your organization forever. But even that is not the end of the story, because there is another hidden fifth benefit to IC teams who pursue DFVP. Because everybody knows best practice has been applied to way more than just internal communication. So once you introduce your organization to DFVP and they can see how much better it is than best practice, it's not unreasonable to think they're probably going to want all their business practices to be DFVP. Now, it's quite likely some of them already are in the legal and finance departments, for example. It's just that those folk haven't used that terminology. And it's also likely that other practices aren't DFVP yet. But what would it take to make them so? Well, obviously, people inside your organization will have to discuss and agree what is and what is not DFVP when it comes to, say, customer service or replacing company cars or the IT helpline or whatever. In other words, to establish any other DFVP practice, the relevant people will have to communicate with one another. And how can they rely on the results of that communicating process if the process itself isn't already demonstrably fit for valid purposes from the start? All of which tells us that when it comes to establishing DFVP practices, internal communication has to come first. And once those practices are established, all line managers can have justifiable confidence that the IC team will step in only when it's demonstrably necessary, not going to start messing about with them if they're doing fine, and that when the IC team do step in, the support they'll be providing will deliver the goods. But of course, all of that can happen only if we can demonstrate the valid purpose of internal communication. So that's what we need to focus on over the course of the next two podcasts. Of course, if you don't want to wait that long, or you're keen to explore more about this subject, you can tap into the dozens of free resources available at comgame.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and if you've any observations you want to make about this podcast, you can join us in the IC Practice Governance Group on LinkedIn. Until next time, take care.